time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 2nd of June 2012. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onuroa. On Saturday the 2nd of June I spoke to Carl Dalton, one of the organisers of a meeting of people concerned about non-notified consent of coastal buildings. I spoke to the local board chair, Faye Storer, and the opinionated islanders, Alan Knight, and this month stepping in, Kevin Appleton. All right, so tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock, we have a meeting taking place, and that meeting is about some concerns about building consent, about minor effects, and about some of the buildings that are going on around the island. And I've got one of the organisers of that meeting, Carl Dalton, on the line with me now. Are you there, Carl?
Yes, I am.
So you're off with your son's rugby game, is it?
Soccer game. We're over in Tinneringa at the moment and playing one of the teams here, down 1-0 at the moment, but just about got a goal just then. Yep, all good.
Good stuff. Good luck to the team from everyone here at Waiheke Radio. So tell us a little bit about this meeting and, you know, what's prompted you to organise it.
Are you there?
Yep. So tell us a little bit about the meeting and what's prompted you to organise that meeting.
Well, there's been a number of people organising it. It's not just me, but it's just to. It's about the public to air their concerns with what's been going on with the passing of resource consents being non-notified, and also the first case of building within the 40-metre coastal yard, which hasn't been allowed before. It's just so that people can air their opinions about what's going on, and if there's a way that we can move forward to try and stop this sort of development on Waiheke.
So is it that particular minor effects clause that's worrying you, that's allowing things to go through without the public being notified about them first?
There's minor and less than minor, but we were a bit worried about that. We asked planners, we had an initial meeting with the planners at council, and they asked them what major was, and there is no clarification of major, and we've since learned that there's no clarification for minor and less than minor, so it's just something that planners can use to push buildings through with no notification to the public.
So you're wanting to get some greater clarification around what the minor effects mean. So at the meeting, is the aim of the meeting to stop further developments of this going on, or is it about greater clarification?
It's not about stopping development on Waiheke, because development's good for Waiheke. It's just about stopping certain types of development that benefits the individual over the community. That's what we want to stop.
Okay, and so what format will the meeting take? You've got someone presenting, or is it just a bit of a free-for-all?
I think the meeting, hopefully it's not going to be a free-for-all. It's going to be, you're going to have a chairperson who's looking after it, but I think it's going to go for 2 hours. The first half is going to be about people airing their opinions, what's happened to them, what they think about the resource management Act or the district plan, and then the second half I think is going to be focusing on moving forward, making plans for if there is a way of getting ourselves out of the situation and looking for a better future for Waiheke, especially for the coastal environment.
So tell us the time and place, Carl.
It's at the Ostend Memorial Hall, at where the RSA is, and it's going to be between 1 and 3pm on Sunday.
Okay. Now, we're going to be talking to Faye Storer in a few moments. So if you had one question for the local board about this issue, what would it be? And I'll ask her in a moment.
It's just we'd like the local board to be informed of these resource consents before they get passed by the council, and we'd also like to know what they are doing in regards to protecting Espinar reserves and things like that, because especially out at Foritana Bay, this house is going to be transported across the reserve. They're going to have a barge coming out to the beach, and it's going to be transported across the reserve there, which is quite delicate, and it's also of historical significance. It's all archaeological sites around there. So some protection for what we have would be a good question.
Okay, we'll answer that question. Okay, well, good luck with the rest of the game, Carl, and thanks for joining us.
Cheers, thanks very much.
Wakey Radio. And I'm joined in the studio by the chair of the local board, Faye Storer. Good morning, Faye.
Hi, Chris.
So we thought it was timely. We're about halfway through the term of the local board, and it was probably a good time to kind of look and see where we're up to. You know, how are things going? What are the issues that have been addressed? What are the issues to be addressed? And so on. So Faye's come along to have a talk to us about that. So Faye, let's just jump straight into it. You've had, 16, 17 months now. What do you feel that the board has been able to achieve, given that it's been a new environment for local body politics here?
Well, I think that's the key. It has been a new environment. It's an untried model, untried not only in New Zealand, but probably in Australasia, who knows elsewhere. And let's face it, the structure's a bit like a batch of scones. It was mixed in the bowl and possibly even put in the oven, but it wasn't cooked properly. And so the board, like every one of the other 20 boards around the region, and the governing body of councillors, and the mayor, and everybody else, has actually been trying to make this structure work. And is it working? Well, no, not 100% yet. There's a long way to go.
So what are the things that do need to be fixed?
Well, what happened was the boards were set up. First of all, the council-controlled organisations were set up, and I think a lot of thought went into those. A lot of thought into the way they'd be set up, what their budgets were, and what their responsibilities would be. A bit more thought went into the mayor's role, which is a very large role, as you know, and the governing body of councillors. The local boards were sort of the last kid on the block, and they got what I'd say is just a bit of a cursory glance. They were given some basic responsibilities at the very beginning, and then the council was told to give them some delegations when they were ready. Now, you might have read in the marketplace recently that the Waiheke board was one of three boards, the others were Waitemata and Albert Eden, that put their foot down on the allocations. What had happened is we'd been given these things to do, and we discovered that, in fact, the officers still had the delegations from the legacy councils. So even that had to be sorted through. We've been asking for more delegations, as have some of the other boards, and not all the boards want more delegations. Quite a few of the boards are happy with what they've got, which is a lot of community engagement and decision-making on some everyday things. But we're wanting more delegations. They have not been forthcoming so far, except for a few that most people don't want, like swimming pool fencing dispensations and a minor, you know, pardon the pun, delegation on whether or not something should be notified. And unfortunately, that only kicked in a few months ago.
Well, let's go to that issue, because you know, that's obviously a contentious issue at the moment. I suppose the placement of buildings, the type of buildings, and the things that are going through unnotified because they're deemed to have minor effect. So where does the local board sit in relation to that? What's the, you know, what, if any, role does the local board have in being able to put some conditions around those kind of issues?
Okay, well, first of all, I think I need to say that the board is pretty shocked at a couple of the applications that have gone through non-notified, and of course one is the Foritana Bay one. And as an experienced long-term planning commissioner myself, and who used to chair one of the planning committees for council, it's my view, both personal and professional, that that should have been notified, no doubt about that. However, it wasn't, and an application was given. As I was just saying to you, Chris, that's the Resource Management Act, which is a central government act, and changes to the RMA need to go to central government. And unfortunately, what central government's done over the recent past is actually to loosen up that RMA rather than to tighten it up, which a lot of people in the community want, and fair enough. I can see exactly why people want it tightened up, because we see the results. So the board actually has no direct involvement at all, neither does the mayor and councillors, except for one planning committee, which obviously we're not involved in, and neither is our councillor Mike Lee. But even so, what's happened fundamentally is that the mayor and governing body, and the governing body is what council is now called, the councillors are now called, have delegated all their authority under the RMA to officers, and that is the norm probably around the country. Can they take some of that back? Yes, to a certain extent, perhaps they can, and we'll certainly be asking for that. But at the end of the day, what happens is professionally trained planners do their job of the planners. We're not our planners, and neither are the councillors, and neither is the mayor. But talking with Mike Lee yesterday and on other occasions, we certainly feel that there is a room for a tightening up, and that's why the board has arranged to meet with Dr. Roger Blakely, who's the chief planning officer, in the next few weeks with Mike, to say, look, we're not happy with the results, and can we have a look at what the planners are doing? We want your managers to tighten up on this.
Because it would seem to me that some of the consents which have been granted actually fly in the face of the local board plan. You know, you have your plan of the Round Island walkway and of, basically the whole economic basis of or element of the plan is based on increasing tourism through attractions, through walkways and, you know, the coastal reserves and so on. So the kinds of developments that are going ahead, those beachfront developments, actually fly in the face of the plan.
Well, in a way, I suppose you could say that, yes, because it's about the impact and on the environmental impact and the amenity value, and definitely what you see when you race around. And when you go out for a walk, especially if you're an international visitor, you're not expecting to see a great big development when you go around a lovely, what you think is a pristine bay. So definitely in that respect. What it is, it's the assessments. My view is that it's going wrong because they're qualitative assessments. When you've got rules and regulations and objectives that are quantifiable, then they can be measured. But when it's a, you know, this will not affect, this is not contrary to the New Zealand Coastal Policy Statement, this is not contrary to the regional Coastal Policy Statement or the Marine Park or this or that or anything else, they're qualitative assessments. And that's why, in my view, this one and the Onitangi Beach one should have been notified, because with a qualitative assessment, everybody has a different view.
What about the countdown? Because it seems that the process there is actually going to have implications beyond just that Ostend site.
What kind of implications can address those?
There's been concerns raised that some of the application would affect the height restrictions for building on in other areas of Waiheke as well.
That is a discussion that we probably haven't got time for, because that's to do with an appeal to the district plan, as you know, that WIPIG has been having. So probably, let's just go back to the first thing. Why has the supermarket not been notified? Well, I can't answer that because it's not my decision. Having said that, it's a commercial area, and in the commercial areas and in the industrial areas on Waiheke, as anywhere else, there are parameters within which people can operate. And the RMA might sound as though it's the Communities Act, but I can tell you it is very much an Applicants Act. It is about certainty for people who are applying to do things. Now, when you're doing it yourself, you appreciate that. When someone else is doing it and they are it's a big development, it's not quite so clear. So the RMA is not your friend. And the supermarket, yes, they applied for a dispensation to the height, and that's been dealt with, and certainly nothing to do with me or the board. Unfortunately, we've not been involved in that. But I think you have to put an application like that in the context of the zoning of the site. It's not a residential site, it's commercial, and people are expected to be able to do something within a commercial site. Now, that's not giving excuses for it at all. It's simply a reality of the planning law.
So let's go back to the plan. So we've kind of talked briefly about that economic component of the plan. And I suppose this relates to your early comments about the degree of delegation or authorities that you've been given from council. So when we look at that, the final outcome, the local board plan, is it what you hoped it would be? Or have you been restrained?
We've been restrained by budget because you never know how much budget there's going to be and there's always less than you want.
And this seemed like a ridiculous process where you had no budget, you had no idea of the budget when you had to develop the plan.
It has been a ridiculous process. All 21 boards across the region and the councillors have gone into this in good faith, but I have to say that the financial parameters, the financial information was shocking, and there's no point in looking for someone to blame on that. It just was totally inadequate. And in fact, at one stage, we spent a whole workshop going through figures that were in fact Albert Eden's. They weren't even ours. So it has been extremely difficult, and it's just been... a nightmare, quite frankly. Having said that, we've done the best we can, and we've come in with, we're definitely within budget, within a very wide parameter we've been given. In my introduction to the 2012-2013 local board agreement, which will be will come out fairly soon, I have actually made reference to that and said that it's been difficult to know how to work with those financial inadequacies, and we certainly hope it's not going to happen again. Now, having said that, as far as having some visions concerned and getting people's ideas about what they want, then it's been a fabulous success. We had 30 engagement sessions with the plan of all sorts of different people, and it's interesting as to how many ideas they have in common. So I think we captured almost everything, and certainly everything that was going to be workable in that plan. And okay, we have to look for budgets. Well, so far we're doing pretty well.
And so I wanted to talk about, I suppose, how much the plan is a living document and guides, you know, the everyday processes of what's happening around the island. So two things in the plan. One is around that the board will play a role in, you know, kind of community facilities for community organisations. And there's also a part in the plan about arts and arts complex. Now, we've just gone through a process where a number of arts-related organisations are being, you know, are being kicked out. You know, I suppose it's a bit harsh. But, well, they had their tenancies, you know, ended because the buildings
were
booked out. The studios. So, and we've also had that facility, which was there, the info centre, been moved off-site. So how did the plan and those elements of, you know, developing arts complexes, of helping community groups with and organisations have facilities to operate, how did that play out in the process of those studios being closed down, the movement of the info centre and what, you know, what become of that? What does it actually mean in a day-to-day reality like that?
Well, what it probably means is that some people have got leases, will have to share them with other people in the meantime. But what we've got is we've got construction of the library, which is imminent, and that's why the studios have come down and the info centre has been moved, because that's the footprint of the new library. So what we've got secure is the budget for the library, which starts soon, the budget for then upgrading the courtyard around the new library and also upgrading the existing artwork courtyard. So that money's all in there. Now, what we've also managed to get in the 10-year plan is $5 million towards upgrading the existing artworks building, that Whittaker's and the gallery and the cinema and edges are in right now. So that's a $5 million upgrade. It's not a new build because the officers have told us that it's actually quite sound, but it obviously needs a lot of work. Now, during the engagement on the Waiheke Local Board plan, a member of the public came up with this idea of an arts centre, and it's taken wings. Actually, a very good idea, because the theatre, the current theatre, is not obviously part of the $5 million upgrade of the other building, because it's separate. And then neither is this White House site and this area of the artworks complex. So, looking out into the future, one day, wouldn't it be nice to have a purpose-built theatre with areas for studios and the like? And so that's why we've put that into the long-term plan. In the interim, as I say, people might need to share, and we're going to be looking at that. But in the shorter term, perhaps be about 12 months, what will happen is the existing library space will become vacant, and the board is already talking to the property people about how we could fit the studios into there. So hopefully we'll only have about a 12-month downturn. And if things go over time, then it shouldn't be much more than that, because, of course, the library people are keen to get into their new space as well. And the property department has confirmed in discussions with the local board that we can look at what goes in there.
Was there any active consideration or active facilitation of finding alternative accommodation for some of the organisations which were tenanted down there?
Yes, the local board has given a grant to the Artworks Theatre to give to put their office space, current office space, which is in Studio 1, into the foyer, and that work will start soon. Upcycle, as you know, has taken premises down in Oniroa, and the shifting of the eyesight building was in some small way associated with Upcycle and what might be their future needs. It's gone to a trust called the Giant Leap Forward, as you might know. The Waste Resource Trust, the last I heard, they were looking at the old police station. I don't know if that was still a goer or not. And, of course, Tanya has the lease on the garage right here. And who else is there? Upcycle. Well, Nancy Thompson, who's been absolutely fabulous as the Artworks Coordinator, is going off to do her job with Head and Sculpture on the Gulf, and we are hoping to secure funding for her to continue when things then get a bit more animated as the library gets constructed.
Yeah, and she's actually working out of here until that time.
Mm.
Yeah. So was the consideration of retaining the Info Centre and reciting it on council land?
Yes, there was. We looked around as to where it could go, looked at costs of resource consents, and looked at people who might like to go in it. But at the end of the day, something like that can be more expensive to deal with, shifting something like that, getting a resource consent, having it in storage, than it can to actually rebuild. But that was out there in the public, and at the time, unfortunately, no one came up with any firm ideas on that. And say we asked for expressions of interest, therefore, from trust, so yeah, it would remain in some sort of public ownership.
Blackpool School seemed like the obvious site, and it seems like getting a resource consent isn't that difficult at the moment, as we were talking about earlier, with the minor effects. All right, so just a couple more quick questions. So a number of the boards have been very proactive on citywide issues. So two in particular. One, the issue around pokie machines at Sky City, and that issue around both the increase of the number of pokie machines at Sky City and the impacts on the overall number across the city where we've got the sinking lid policy. And the other issue, which has been a bit wider, has been the Ports of Auckland dispute and the council's stance on that. Now, a number of boards have been proactive and taken passed resolutions and taken an advocacy role with the mayor or with council on those issues. That hasn't been something that Waiheke Local Board has done. Is it something you've considered, and if so, how have you reached your decision around that?
Well, regarding the gambling one, Auckland City Council led the way, and we've had a sinking lid policy for some years now, and it's the same with having pokie machines on council reserve land. There's no increase. So it hasn't been an issue which has been of particular concern to the board. We're involved in all the discussions and workshops that go in across town. Some boards have taken the lead on that. It's been particularly important to them. But at our chair's meetings, which we have monthly in town, I've certainly supported that viewpoint. Regarding the Ports of Auckland, no, we haven't got involved. We've been actually more involved in trying to get some responsibilities for the boards and helping to write the blueprint for local boards into the future, quite frankly, to make sure that they continue at all, because they're not secure, in my view. If they don't work, they're not secure. And if they don't have something to do, they're not secure.
Okay, and just finally, politics, I suppose, on Waiheke is perhaps a little more upfront than it is in some of the other areas of the city, and helped along by the by-election. There's been a lot of talk about local body politics. A lot of that debate to me seemed to be focused on quite minor issues, the shape of a curb, the Esplanade, which I'm frankly sick to death of hearing about, but do you feel that the debate on local politics, which is very active, Are people focusing on the right issues?
Well, there are always issue-based politics, no doubt about that. People, some people stand on issues, some people stand on their reputations and experience. That's politics. But I think in terms of what we started to talk about in terms of achievements, the board is racing through and getting a lot of things done. And we've been very successful in this last round of negotiation with the governing body in getting some significant slips money, small local improvements, which means that we can respond very quickly to people's needs like bus stops and footpaths, etc. So, well, what can you say? That's politics.
So just to pick up on your point there, so how much slips money have you got?
Well, it has to be signed off by the mayor and governing body, but we look as though we've got about 409, I think, capital works, and about 300 and something operational, but I can't confirm that until it goes through the committee.
Right, and some of that will be already ring-fenced for particular projects?
No, not necessarily. What we do is we kind of collect them and put them in a folder. Come the July meeting, we'll start to think about them and look at them once the budget's confirmed. And they follow the category areas in the Waiheke Local Board plan, you know, so some are transport related, although obviously Auckland Transport has the sole authority for those, so we can only make a contribution if we think it's going to help. But other things like the walkways and the bus shelters, we're responsible for, if we want to get them done quickly.
There were some areas in the local board plan where there's no budget attached, you know, and it's from existing within existing budgets or advocacy. So, for example, the exploration of kind of a youth employment scheme and so on. Does that funding that you've just been talking about, does that give you the discretion to be able to actually pick up some of those other areas and put some funding towards those?
We don't need to. That's within existing budgets, and the staff are working on that and have been doing so for some months. What the mayor's tried to do, and I guess he has to be congratulated for it, he's tried to keep the rates down as much as possible, and that's fabulous. In doing so, of course, some things have had to go, but one thing that has happened is he said to staff right across the board, right, you're doing things, they're not necessarily the local board priorities, let make them those priorities, and you must find within your existing budgets and staff time the time to do these. And that's why the plan says, one, the board will fund it if we have to, if we can't find anywhere else. We'll advocate, which means we don't have the authority to do it, or it's within existing staff budgets, which means the staff have said, yep, fine, we can do that. And that's been underway for a while, as I said.
Yep. Okay, well, thanks very much, Faye, for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
Okay, it's Faye Storer, Chair of the Waiheke Local Board, giving us an update on where things are up to with our local board around halfway through their current term. Yeah, you're on Waiheke Radio. This is Island Life, brought to you by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneiroa. Thanks very much to Carol and Steve for supporting the show and supporting the station. It's the first Saturday of the month, so as I usually am, I'm joined by the opinionated Islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone, but Alex Stone's not here, so I'm joined by Alan Knight and Kevin Appleton. So let's just see if we can get some microphones going around the place here.
Alan, good morning.
Oh yes, that's booming on through.
Loud and clear.
And Kevin, we should have you now.
Yeah, good morning.
Yeah, just you need to be straight onto that.
Straight
Kevin.
Onto the microphone.
Yep, that's it. Okay. We've got it.
Good.
All right. So, welcome along, Kevin.
Thank you.
An able stand-in for Alex. And we'll launch right into this, because when I found out that Alex was away and we needed to find a replacement opinionated person, I thought, where will I find an opinionated person? So I turned to Facebook, where there's been some really, really lively opinionated debate about, you know, local and national and international issues over the last little while. And Kevin is one of those people who likes to share his opinion, so he got the job. So welcome along.
Thank you very much for that.
All right, so just keep
closer,
straight.
Closer.
Yes,
okay,
that's
right.
It. All right. So let's start off with this. We're about this this point about, you know, Facebook, online discussion, local issues. You know, it seems we're using an international forum to talk about very, very local
very,
things.
Very local issues, yes. It's... Now, I mean, I forget how long Facebook's been around, but I know I've been on it for 18 months. Ever since the whole business with the local board election 18 months ago, that was where Facebook on the island started to come into its own, and there a number of a small number of local issues sites were emerging on Facebook. But in the last year or so, what we've seen is the development that enough people are on the island are on Facebook, and we're starting to crowd out the Waiheke Community Notice Board Facebook page. And the debate on there was getting so lively, particularly in the during the by-election thing. And this, of course, was the site of Graham Hooper's classic meltdown. And you had to be on Facebook to actually see this. So the discussions were getting more and more lively. And it came to the point where one person actually took the view that, no, come on, there's just too much on here. This is supposed to be... a notice board page where people are sort of logging in to talk about jam making and chook rearing and stuff, and there's all this boisterous political debate going on, and so there was this point at which we all us noisy folk got evicted from the community notice board page. Firstly onto Waiheke People's Parliament, which was a voluntary thing which Hans Versluis took on. He started that one up and said, all right, come on, all you argumentative types, you can come onto here. But then there's subsequently been a debating page set up as well, and this is interesting that Kevin here and myself, we've been chatting away now for a number of months, and this is the first time we've ever actually met. But we've already got a fair idea of each other's opinions through this constant involvement. Certainly any day which I'm at home, I will generally sort of log into any of these sites and just start... just indulging in the whole conversation. And as a result, I don't know about you, but I've become very fervent in trying to tell other people about Facebook. And because a lot of people are going, oh no, I can't be doing with it. But I think it is time that more people got involved.
So Kevin, do you think is it adding or subtracting from our social intercourse here on the island?
Oh, I think it's adding, you know. As you've just said, you know, I mean, people meet online, you know, and they have these kind of relationships through the websites that and chat rooms that they don't have in real life, you get to meet the people eventually, like as we have done this morning, and you already have this kind of heads up about, you know, their views and whether you're likely to get on with them or not. And you know, there's a bunch of people out there on the debating page who I'm looking forward to meeting.
Yes.
I kind of know them from around the island, and I know them by face, but I'm sort of looking at, you know, I want to sort of meet them in the flesh.
So what did you think about this, the eviction, as Alan puts it, of, you know, moving kind of a political or controversial debate off to a separate page?
Yeah, well, I've been thinking a lot about this because I've sort of moved around quite a lot and sort of, you know, taken myself in and out of groups. And currently I'm in the debating group, but not kind of signed up to any of the others, although I do look at those pages. But I've denied myself the ability to be able to comment as a sort of safety mechanism, really. So I kind of feel safe on the debating Waiheke People's Parliament. I feel that you can kind of say what you want, really, and that's okay. But I, you know, I feel that I, at the moment, I'm just restricting myself to that, to making comments on one of those three sites. I've been thinking about the whole thing because obviously there has been sort of differences of opinion and some drama, and I think of it as the development of a group of people. There's like 800 people online in the main group now, and you know that we're actually communicating with each other in quite a novel way. You know, the fact that you can actually make a comment and have responses from, you know, up to 800 people in a few seconds is quite incredible, really, and I think it's unprecedented.
And some of the meandering threads are just fascinating to watch. And, of course, they stay there, so you can always go back. And unless the original person who kicked them off decides, oh, maybe that was all a bit awful, and they'll take it down. But generally, most of this stuff stays there. And some of these conversations go very Waiheke on you. I think there was one of the most surprising ones recently. There was one from the Choral Society where they'd been taking some pictures of people done up in their makeup for the Mikado. Should men wear makeup was the thing. And sort of 70 or 80 comments later, this conversation had taken a very, very strange turn indeed, thanks to the intervention of Susie Newborn, who came up with a really remarkable series of questions that weren't really about the original thing, but set the whole debate off in a very amusing way. Mm.
So there's been, you know, as you say, some of these debates on there have got pretty fierce, and probably, well, there was a whole debate around Graham Hooper and what he had to say around one of the other candidates, around Paul Walden. But the other one was the debate around whether or not Dave Roche should be able to set up his cart down at Placemakers. Right. And people got into it, didn't they?
That flared up very rapidly. And, of course... it was interesting, actually, to sit down and talk to Dave himself about it. He seemed to be the most relaxed person on the island about the whole thing. He said, look, it's just one of those things. I'm not bothered. And chances are we'll get a better spot out of this. And as far as the publicity went, you can't buy publicity like that. But it did seem like a bit of a shabby thing at the time.
What do you reckon about that, Kevin? Does it get carried away?
Yeah, I think it does get carried away at times, but I think people are finding the level, you know, using this kind of new way of communicating with such a large number of people in one go, and you know, in the absence of being able to sit in front of them and seeing how they're reacting to it, you know, you're kind of in the dark, really. And we've got such a diversity of people on the island that, you know, and I've made this comment a few times, that, you know, sense of humour sometimes doesn't translate, you know.
You have to be very careful with that. Yes.
And what, you know, what is, you know, perfectly normal in perhaps the north of England is seen as quite, you know, potentially offensive by other people, and it's not intended to be, you know, but I think you start to learn about those things, and you start to find a level.
There is, yes, there's a sort of a development of the way you handle this. I mean, I personally feel the need to stir things up quite a bit on there. That you get on there some days and the whole thing is just so depressingly, emetically liberal.
You feel like having a poke, don't you?
You do. You sort of think, ah, so that's where Neil from the Young Ones ended up. And you see these people going, oh, man, everything's such a bummer, and, oh, the ecosystem is collapsing, man, and the corporate greed, and... blah, 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 blah. How do you people get out of bed in the morning? You're so gloomy. So I do always feel this urge to sort of have a little poke at some of these people.
So isn't that one of the issues of having the specific debating pages? Because, for example, like I know, Kevin, that you used to like, say, if someone was putting out something about homeopathy, for example, yep, it was like you could barely help yourself.
Yep.
Now, but it's not the same if you start a debate on the debating page and say, what do you think about homeopathy? I mean, it's not making fun of someone.
Health is one of the things that I will jump over the barricades for, because it's my work and it's what I've done for the last 30 years, and you know, I have a real kind of spot for misinformation and hearing things that I know are not supported by evidence, and that, you know, may potentially be damaging to people if not neglectful. So I will always jump over the barrier on that issue, and I'll always jump over the barrier on education as well, because I think health and education are fundamental things that, you know, if you've got them, you can sort of progress and you can change your life. But if you haven't got those basics, then you can be stuck in a place. And, you know, the recent education kind of issues that have come up, you know, have you know, been very sort of vexing in that regard, really.
Okay, so let's turn to that. Just before we do, the Facebook pages that we're talking about, for people who aren't on these, Waiheke Island People's Parliament, the Waiheke Community Notice Board, and the Waiheke Debating Group. So, you know, if you're not already, go along and have a look and get a sense of what we're talking about there on Facebook. So now let's return to this issue of education. So obviously in the budget, you know, or pre-budget, we had the announcement about increase of class sizes. Further information came through in the budget on that, which meant that the changes were more significant than the pre-budget announcement had indicated, and then we've had a whole lot of people from the education sector going, you've really got this wrong. It's the wrong decision, and you haven't thought it through. We've seen a somewhat of a backtrack on some elements of it from the government, and we get the ever-smiling Hikia Parata going, we're focusing on quality. We're focusing on quality, like a robot.
Yes.
So, you know, what do you think?
It's a fantastic own goal for the government, this one. Ridiculously bad. But then again, given how lacklustre the performance of the opposition is, if National are going to lose the next election, as we hope they are, they're really going to have to put the work in, because Labour certainly aren't.
Yeah.
So you've been thinking about this class size thing a bit, Kevin?
Yeah, it's self-evident. I mean, the class sizes are too large already, and making them still larger is totally ridiculous and short-sighted. And I can see no rationale for it, and except to fund tax cuts, which, frankly, I think is pretty sick. As I say, I think that you need the basics of health and education. If you've got those in place, great, whatever else. But, you know, they're not in place, and, you know, they need more funding, not less.
So we did. We've actually asked both of the principals of the local primary schools to come on this morning, but they're both unavailable. So we will be talking to.
That's a shame. That would be a broadcast worth hearing.
Yeah, one or both of them will be on next week, and we'll cover that off because it's going to have a significant impact on people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, but the government. The handling of it hasn't been great, has it?
No, it hasn't. It's we're starting to see the cracks appear, which is great because I, for one, would hate to see National go for a third term. When at the next election, I really would like to think that Labour could sort of get their act together and get back in and do a couple of terms themselves. But then again, I think some of the endless bleating about how ghastly National are. It's like, oh, come on, get over it. I survived 9 years of Helen Clark. You'll survive 6 of John Key. I do find it sort of rather sweet, however, the way in which New Zealand, with the major parties crammed so firmly into the centre, it's a wonder anyone can actually breathe, that how much we have to make an effort to sort of imagine that there is a difference between the two main parties.
And do you take a glee out of seeing the politicians trip over?
I don't know about a glee. You know, I just like to see, you know, that things being exposed for what they are, you know, and the sort of the gloss and the kind of the spin being removed, and you know, to see what's underneath, because I think people need to know what's underneath, and you know what the sort of those policies mean for ordinary people, and not, you know, not people who are benefiting from, you know, tax cuts, and it matters a hell of a lot, you know, to you know, the future of our young people, and what opportunities they have available for them, really.
All right. So now, from lofty issues of such as the, you know, the rise and fall of governments and education, down to the road level,
genuine street level discussion,
street level politics.
Because I think this is something I've been hearing a lot about. And you know, when you emailed me the other day, said, right, what are we going to talk about? I thought, well, roading has got to be a big one because we're seeing some very, very odd stuff happening with the roading. You've got to wonder who's in charge of it. Now, that whole new development along Totoki Road, where they've basically taken up all the road surface, they've redone the edges, they've cut several new driveways for people's houses, which are apparently quite difficult to get up now unless you have a four-wheel drive. I've talked to a couple of people, one a former roading engineer, who was saying, well, basically this is just put together with wallpaper, paste and cornflakes, and it's already become uneven. I mean, who knows what the budget was for that entire road rebuild? Must have been hideous if you lived on Bay Road, because all the traffic, including the buses, was heading up Bay Road, which is pretty small for that level of traffic. For what, 6 weeks? It was pretty awful. And driving back along it last night, about half past one in the morning, I took a taxi home and was saying to the taxi driver as we drove along that section of road, what do you think of this? Is it any good? He says, no, look at it. It's already bumpy. I said, how long would you give it? 6 months, he said, which is interesting because that's exactly what this roading engineer was saying. 6 months and you're going to see the potholes appearing. That clay wash is going to start emerging every time it rains. And the more rain you get, eventually that whole thing will fall to bits. And I would love to see some accountability on this, because somebody must have sat there and worked out what was going to happen. And in 6 months' time, when that's all having to be redone, and after all, this isn't the first time. I mean, Hill Road, same problem. The Causeway, same problem. Why don't they just do it properly, instead of coming along every 3 or 4 years and having to do a complete rebuild?
Well, I suppose there is a question about whether fixing that aspect of the road was actually the point. You know, because we do hear that there is a problem with the base that they put underneath on the island, that it's too soft. So it may be, you know, that the focus was the widening rather than the fixing. But Kevin, tell us, you know, you were telling us before that you went and had a look at the roads yesterday to find out what all the fuss was about.
Yeah, well, roads are not my strong point, you know. I mean, I'm living on Waiheke, to me, is still a sort of, you know, dream come true. And all my comparisons are made with, you know, the ring road around Leeds and you know, the nightmares of the British traffic system. So to me, you know, none of this matters at all as long as, you know, they don't fall into the ocean. So on the way home from school yesterday evening, I picked up my 16-year-old daughter and took a detour, and she's kind of going, where are we going, Dad? I said, oh, no, we're just driving up and down to Turkey Road. You know, what for? I said, well, I'm on the radio tomorrow, and I've got to say something intelligent about it. And we were driving up and down trying to work out what the problem was. And her comment was that they seem to have carpeted along the edges of it. You know, and
that's a really clever thing. if you look down at the road going down to Matiatia, it's a wonderful sort of impregnated matting,
right?
Probably made out of something biodegradable like jute, and then some kind of water soluble
right.
glue, and then grass seed.
Right.
So you just pin it down where you want grass.
Right.
And immediately it just sprouts, and the matting after a while just disappears.
So that bit's good.
Yeah.
Right.
That's very okay. clever. I love the way they do that.
Right. Yeah.
But another interesting roading thing this roading engineer was telling me about, he said ever since they reduced the speed limit on the Onitangi Strait. Now, yes, from one point of view, it is great to have a speed limit there because the number of people who went into power poles and blacked out one end of the island because they just couldn't drive a car in a straight line at 80 kilometres an hour. It's wonderful that it's put back to 60, but then, of course, there are consequences. Once you drop the speed limit on a road like that, its priority in the roading budget drops. So, Onitangi Strait, which would normally have road crews all over it keeping it nice, no longer does because it's a 60-kilometre road. It's not such a priority. So right now, the bits they're smoothing out at the side for the walkway along there are actually smoother than the road itself. I drive it a lot, of course, because I work out that way. And, that road is gradually falling to bits. There are some quite substantial pieces coming away from the side of it. But apparently that doesn't matter anymore because it's a slow road, so they'll get round to it when they get round to it.
I'm afraid I'm with you, Kevin. I find it pretty hard to get excited about, to be honest.
Well, I'm just worried about it because it's how much of our money are they spending on this stuff?
Not very much,
you said, obviously not enough.
But it still must. I mean, a six-week rebuild of a road must cost millions of dollars to do.
It is job creation, though, and it is keeping people employed, you know.
Well, I suppose so, but I mean, couldn't they be employed at something a lot better than that?
Mm.
It just seems when they keep telling us, oh, we can't afford this, can't afford that, you can afford to keep rebuilding the roads every couple of years because they keep falling to bits. Because they're put together out of oatmeal. Surely wouldn't it be better to spend the money, do them properly, and then not have to keep paying this? It's just the financial aspect of it that worries me.
All right, so I'm here with the Opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Kevin Appleton, and as you can hear, both of them originated from the United Kingdom.
That's right.
So our final thing I want to look at this morning is, we're at the time of the Jubilee. It's the 60th, isn't it?
60th, yes.
60th Jubilee of Queen Elizabeth. And this has always surprised me about you, Alan, but I know that you are a fan of the monarchy.
Yeah, I'm just a fan of what works. And until I hear a really good explanation about why New Zealand should become a republic, I'll stick with what we've got. Thanks all the same.
And where are you on this, Kevin?
Well, I'm puzzled why New Zealand isn't a republic, but, you know, I'm not a New Zealand citizen yet. So, you know, it's not really my call. It's up to you guys to decide on that. But I know that my mother, who's 80, is basically planning to make two flasks of tea and a very large plate of sandwiches and not move from her chair all day to watch the dear old Queen have her day. And she told me very proudly that there's a flotilla of 1,000 ships going down the Thames, and there's going to be a waka full of Maori people at the front of it. So she's looking forward to that. Yeah. And sorry, that's her pronunciation, not mine, by the way. But a waka. So that's a Scouse
Maori. If you put 1,000 ships into the Thames, you could probably lift the level of it enough to wipe a few things out.
Depends how big the ships were.
So, I mean, happy birthday, Queen. That's what I mean. I love the Sex Pistols, and you know, and was very much against the monarchy at that time. But I've sort of warmed to the Queen. Really, I think she's done a great job over 60 years, and you know, I think good luck to her.
I just feel, though, the Republican argument, which is way too big an argument to get into here, I just question why you'd suddenly want to go from having a prime minister that you're not happy with to having a president you're not happy with either. I don't see the benefit of it. I can really only think of three decent workable republics in the world that I'd actually want to go and go anywhere near, and that's Ireland, France and Germany. If we could be a republic like them, that'd be fine. But even so, I don't see what's in it for us. As it is at the moment, we get the use of somebody else's head of state. It's a useful division of political power, and I don't see a reason to change just yet.
So,
and as Kevin points out, there is a whole group of the population to whom this stuff is just lovely. It's got a nice quality to it of something that's above the dismal run of everyday politics.
I agree with that.
And as you say, you know, people will sit down with a cup of tea and they will watch the whole thing and just revel in it.
Will either of you be doing that?
A bit, actually. I'm planning on brewing at home on Tuesday, so I may watch a bit of it. But
yeah, I'd like to see, you know, some of the highlights, and I'll get a full commentary from my mum on Skype.
I think that the royal family is solely responsible for the underfloor insulation in my house being installed, because when that bloody wedding was on, and I just, you know, and it was being watched avidly in my household, I couldn't bear it, so I went under the house and spent all of those hours installing the underfloor insulation.
I must admit, I couldn't do the wedding. That was a bit much for me.
Yeah.
I
think it'd be good if we kind of missed a generation, and you know, Charles kind of, you know, sidestepped and that kind of William.
Well, yeah, because
Harry would be great.
I think if we really are insistent on separating ourselves from the monarchy, somebody in Canada was suggesting, why can't they have Harry as their king? I was going, no, New Zealand. If he's up for grabs as king, he's got to come and be king of New Zealand. He'd be fantastic. He's a party animal. We'd love him here.
Yeah. All right, the Opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Kevin Appleton. Thanks very much for stepping in, Kevin.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great to have you here, and your very, very booming radio-friendly voice.
Oh.
Yes. Nice bass-heavy voice. Seems to work well on radio.
Certainly does.
Yeah, so thank you to you both for being here, and we'll be joined on the first Saturday of next month by the Opinionated Islanders once again.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues.
Every
Saturday morning from 10 to 12,
and
with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirawa.